Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio, your cosmetic surgery connection. Join cosmetic surgery Nip Tuck Coach, beauty expert, and author of Safety First, A Consumer Guide to Cosmetic Surgery, Michelle Garber, your host of the Nip Tuck Radio Show. Michelle's goal is to empower listeners and help them make safe cosmetic surgery procedure choices. This fun and lively show explores the world of beauty and cosmetic surgery and features expert guests on a variety of topics. No hype. Your host, Michelle Garber, is here today to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic surgery.
Hi, everyone. This is Michelle Garber, and welcome to another episode of Nip Tuck Talk Radio. I'm Michelle Garber, your host, and we're broadcasting live this beginning of the afternoon here on the West Coast from San Francisco. If you don't know me, I'm founder of Nip Tuck Coach, an independent cosmetic procedure consultancy, and I'm a patient advocate. My goal is to help you navigate the confusing world of cosmetic procedures by keeping you safe and well-informed so that not only do you get a great result, but you get the best result. To create more consumer awareness for safety and beauty, I've written a comprehensive guide called Safety First, the 10 Golden Rules for Safe Cosmetic Surgery, which you can download for free at my website, which is www.niptuckcoach.com. So plastic surgery is, in my eyes, a combination of art and science. And I think every surgeon has their own style and technique, views of the human face and body, and also their own perception of what is beautiful. And throughout history, beauty's changed. It's been dictated by Hollywood, like the golden years of Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor, or Twiggy, and now Kim Kardashian. And I want to read you a quote that I read from The Examiner. I think it was written in 2013. And this is what it says. Now, every girl is expected to have Caucasian blue eyes, full Spanish lips, a classic button nose, hairless Asian skin with a California tan, a Jamaican dance hall ass, long Swedish legs, small Japanese feet, the abs of a lesbian gym owner, the hips of a 9-year-old boy, and the arms of Michelle Obama and doll tits. So joining me today from New York is Dr. Steve Falick to discuss beauty as well as his own personal views on the subject. Hello, Dr. Falick. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Michelle, and thanks for having me. And in my practice, to meet that person, so I'd be shocked if they're out there.
Oh, the person of the quote?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know what that person looks like either, but that's what I read.
I'm a little afraid of that person, but I think the reporter certainly summed up, you know, the aspirations of many.
Yeah, the Jamaican dance hall ass with the long Swedish legs, the small Japanese feet, and the abs of a lesbian gym owner, and the hips of a 9-year-old boy.
I think they might tip over that person, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, really. Well, Dr. Falick is a board certified by the American Board of Plastic Surgery with expertise in the fields of cosmetic plastic surgery of the face and body. He is past president of the New York Regional Society of Plastic Surgeons. His views and opinions on plastic surgery has been featured in publications including the New York Times, the New York Post, New York Daily News, Glamour, and InStyle magazine. He's written many articles for both the general public as well as the cosmetic and beauty professional world. He is frequently invited contributor to multiple fashion, beauty, and style blogs. Dr. Falick has also been seen on national television outlets such as CNN, NBC, and Fox affiliates discussing some of the newest techniques in cosmetic surgeries. He has offices in New York City and New Jersey. So, America's obsession with celebrities and plastic surgery. What's your take on that?
Well, it was interesting. I just happened to read the New York Times this morning and a whole article how ad sales and subscriptions for your People magazines, your InStyle magazines, your Us Weeklies are heading down. And I'm not sure if that's a reflection of the weather or the fact that maybe America's obsession with beauty and our celebrities is a little bit on the downslope. It just seems like currently there's almost sort of a brushback, against the beauty world and against celebrities. Here in New York City, there's been I'm out in the Hamptons for the weekend, and all anybody ever wants to talk about is how we hate the Kardashians and we want nothing to do with them in our quiet little enclave here in New York. So I think there's definitely been a pullback from a certain, overhyped media celebrities, and I think that that is affecting plastic surgery in some respects.
Do you think that's age-related, though, the pullback? Do you see that in different generations? I mean, that the younger generations, the 20s and 30s, they're still going after looks like Kim Kardashian and the big butts, and they're looking at different celebrities and want to emulate them. Or do you think that it's going across the board of different generations? Because I think more mature women, probably yes. I mean, they're kind of sick of seeing it. But the younger generation, I wonder.
Yeah, actually, I would agree with you. I think that there's still the 20-year-olds who are somewhat obsessed with that, and they are coming in saying that they're looking for more of sort of a stylized body. I think that's basically been going on for the last 5 to 10 years, and I would say it probably started even before Kim Kardashian. You got the J-Lo effect, with what everybody calls it, the rise of sort of the Hispanic population in America, and with that, an emphasis more on the backside area. So I think that it's more of a generational and ethnic change than it is anything else.
And what about when you look at the fashion magazines? And to me, it seems like most of the models, and I know that a lot of them have been photoshopped, but they all look alike in terms of their, the height, the fullness in the cheek, the high cheekbones, the fullness under the brow, the eyes looking a little different than they used to look years ago because of the fullness under the brow. And now when you have an upper eyelid surgery, the trend is not to take out as much fat as they used to take out. And then if you've had it done and they've taken out too much fat, they're putting back fat in with fat transfer and fillers. And it seems like there definitely is a consistency in how women are looking. Therefore, I think the perception of what's beautiful in the eyes of maybe consumers is really dictated by that to a large degree. Do you agree with that?
I would agree. As somebody who subscribes, as I joke, to every Condé Nast magazine possible, and my office is filled with the Vanity Fairs and the Elles and the Glamours and the Vogues, I think you make an excellent point. What we tend to look at when we look at those models and we look at their faces is they're all young. They're all 20, 25-year-olds, and yes, they're photoshopped, but they have beautiful cheekbones, they have beautiful facial structures. And that only really is a small segment of the population that can look like that. Most of my patients, and I think most of the patients that plastic surgeons see, are a bit older. They're seeing patients in their 30s and 40s. And if they come into our office asking to look like that, I mean, we can't necessarily give them the 20, 25-year-old face with, high cheekbones, glowing skin. We do our best, but that facial structure has basically changed from 10, 15, 20 years later. So there is definitely that look that the media is sending out, that they're saying this is what you need to look at. But it's really not, it's really not apparent. It's really not appropriate for most of the patients that I see. What I find interesting is that, and again, I'm in New York, I'm not in L.A., but people are looking more at somebody like Jennifer Aniston, okay, who's got that facial feature. She doesn't necessarily have the most spectacular, perfect features, but she's got features that the typical 30, 40-year-old female is interested in. On the other hand, you get somebody like Madonna who, okay, 20 years ago had those high cheekbones. She's been working out like crazy. Her face looks gaunt. She's got no facial fat going on, and she certainly looks older than she used to look. So I think the media is definitely giving us sort of contrasting views across
sort of
all the
mixed messages. Well, it's interesting because I've spoken to a couple of plastic surgeons, and they refer to magazines in terms of if you're looking at fillers. You know, I remember going to one plastic surgeon's office, and we were there, and we were talking about fillers, and he pulls out a picture, and he says, "Well, see, this is how your cheeks should look," you know, and pointing out, you know, the fullness, or another surgeon saying, "Well, this is how your eyes should look, because this is a sign of youthfulness." And what I find interesting about the eyes, it seems like the shape of the eyes that I see in magazines is smaller, almond shape, but smaller, because there's a lot of fat above the eyelid, and that's a natural look
to have fat in the upper eyelid. That is something
right.
that plastic surgeons are adding fat that we didn't do before, and
right.
clearly you're familiar with facial fat. And I used to show this great picture that compared my son, who's now 16, when he was 5 years old, and my mother, who's now in her 80s, and the contrast would be between all the fat in my 5-year-old son versus my mother's unfortunately gaunt face. She made me take the slide down after a couple of years, but there is such a role. I mean, fat is great in the face, and now that a lot of us are more comfortable injecting fat or other fillers in the face, we're adding it to areas that we really never did before. And adding it to that upper eyebrow area is probably one of the newer sort of hot things to be doing in plastic surgery these days.
Right, and it's just interesting to me because I remember as a young girl growing up, you know, that you wanted to have more of an eyelid so you could put your eyeshadow on and everything, and there was just a different philosophy about it. And it wasn't – there was seemed to be more – centimeters between your top of your eyelid and the bottom of your brow, and the look was to raise that because you wanted your makeup to show. And now I see that there seems to be lesser amount of skin showing between that, and that it's a different philosophy in how your eyes should look. And it looks beautiful. I mean, I'm not saying anything that's wrong with it. It's just interesting how it's changed over the years. Even since, you know, I was an adolescent.
I don't claim to be an expert on eye makeup, but I will tell you that every
no?
that you know, no. I'm very good at a lot of things. I'm excellent at a lot of things. Eye makeup's not one of my strengths. But I will tell you from what I read, I read all the women's magazines because I have to. The eyebrow position keeps changing. It's lower, it's higher, it just changes every couple of years. Things are different.
So what are girls supposed to do? there's a lot of changes. But you as a plastic surgeon, so you have one perspective when a patient comes in and sees you, and you look at them, and probably I would imagine right away you're looking at their face if they're coming to you for facial plastic surgery, and you're thinking in your mind, well, we can do this, she would look better with this, and she would look better with that. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when a patient comes to my office, I have my perspective. I'm looking at what bothers me, what I would improve, but at the same time, my first question is, what can I do for you? What are your concerns? Because I may notice certain parts of her face or her body that really, you know, I would take care of and doesn't necessarily bother her at all.
And And how do you translate that into your everyday life? So you're walking down the street and you see women. I mean, do you look at strange women that you see and automatically go to the plastic surgery perspective of what you've been trained in? Oh, well, if this woman did this and this, she would look this way or this way. Or do you accept beauty for what it is naturally? I'm interested in your personal perspective, because there's such a crossover between what you do as a professional and then your personal views.
When I walk down the streets of Manhattan, I rarely notice, you know, people's imperfections. What I do notice is bad plastic surgery. That's what I notice. So if somebody's got, you know, a horrible nose job or visible facelift scars or a brow or Botox that's out of, you know, out of symmetry, or breasts that are just out of proportion to her body, that's what I notice. Because the majority of people in this world, they're never going to have plastic surgery, and they don't really desire plastic surgery. And me placing my hopes and goals on any of those patients is really non-productive. It's when I see those people that have had bad plastic surgery, that's sort of when my surgeon's cap goes on, and I just say to myself, God, what were they thinking, or who did that, or, you know, boy, I could really help them. Doesn't mean I don't appreciate beauty. Obviously, I appreciate beauty, you know, across all sort of arts and sciences. That's part of why I became a plastic surgeon, because I appreciate, you know, the beautiful, and whether it's modern, you know, architecture, whether it's, you know, a well-presented meal, or, you know, beauty out there, I appreciate it. And that's, again, part of why I became a plastic surgeon. But I'm also very good at compartmentalizing what I do. I have an office. I have a job. I love what I do. But, you know, at the end of the day, I sort of need to move away from that and get on with the rest of my life.
So you can look at a woman who's not ever had any work done, and you can accept her beauty for what it is, without having to think, oh, she needs this, she needs that.
I happen to be reading the newspaper today, and again, it's, you know, Friday, the weekend section, and they had a picture of Emmylou Harris. Now, Emmylou Harris is 67 years old. She's got one of the great voices in country music, and I'm not a country music fan by any stretch. And she's been gray since she's probably in her mid-40s, and she's, I think, 67 now. Looks great. Looks beautiful. So never had anything done, probably never will have anything done. Good for her.
So do you think, though, that women are becoming obsessed a little more with wanting this perfection, and can also lead a little bit to depression, because they see, you know, they open up the magazines, they go on Facebook, everyone's taking pictures of selfies, and one selfie is more exposed than the other selfie. And, I mean, it could probably get depressing.
I think the opposite. I think that I've read articles by plastic surgeon media groups that are basically saying everyone's having plastic surgery for the selfie. That, oh, they need to get Botox because of a selfie. And I thought to myself, God, boy, that is just a great marketing gimmick.
Oh,
you open up, I mean, you open up Facebook, and everybody looks different, okay? There's no longer, I mean, you open up Vogue, or you open up Vanity Fair, or you open up Elle, you're seeing the same face as we discussed before. You open up Facebook and you see people who you haven't seen in 30 years, and they look older. I don't think that social media has been a bad thing. I think it's been a good thing. And again, obviously my job is being a plastic surgeon, but, you know, we're here to help the population.
Well, I see on Facebook, maybe because it's the industry that I'm connected to on Facebook, but I see my, you know, personal friends that have aged. Then I see a lot of selfies that are more exposed than others, with being very self-absorbed with how they look.
Did you just say that a selfie is self-absorbed?
Oh, no, it's not self-absorbed at all.
I'm shocked. I'm not a huge Facebook fan, but could we have any more self-absorbed people than the people who post every 5 seconds about what they're doing, what they're eating? I mean, my God, I think the food selfies are a lot more interesting than the selfies themselves.
When people keep changing their selfie photos of themselves all the time, I see a trend. It's one sexier. I'm talking women mostly.
I am too. Absolutely, and I agree with you. And everybody is looking for the new perfect picture. And let's be honest. I talked to my wife, and she says, when I get dressed up, when I look at these pictures, it's not for men, it's for other women. I'm trying to impress other women. So
exactly.
You're all to blame, not me.
I know. We don't want to look beautiful for you. We want to look beautiful for other women.
I mean, I think that there is truly an obsession with beauty in this country. And when a patient comes to my office and they hand me a magazine picture, or they hand me a picture of somebody who they want to look like, that, I won't say it's a red flag, but the first thing I'm going to do is talk perspective. Okay? I mean, if you're a female model, you're beautiful. We're talking less than 1.1% of the population. Am I going to achieve that in the majority of my patients? Absolutely not. Okay? You come to my office, you say, I want to look like Megan Fox. It's not happening, okay? If you say, I want to look better, I want to look younger, I'm concerned about this, then we can have a conversation.
Well, that makes sense. But just to add up,
if you're an African-American female, don't tell me you want to look like Megan Fox, because it doesn't matter how good I am. Okay.
Well, that's not going to happen.
That's never going to happen. So at least I can say to patients, if you're going to bring in a picture, at least bring in a picture of somebody who you think sort of looks a little like you. Okay, and something I can work at.
Yeah. Well, that sometimes. Yeah, there's a lot of other psychological reasons sometimes why that happens too. But I wanted to go back to talking with you about your perspective, for instance, your wife,
right,
and or other surgeons' wives and what you see. Because we talked a little bit about this before we went on the air, and I had a different perspective than you did. So let's hear your perspective first.
Well, as we discussed, you and I had not a disagreement, but we thought that plastic surgeons' wives look different. And there's an old joke in the profession that you never want to be the first wife of the surgeon. That's the one who's, putting all the hours in when we're working hard, when we're residents, when we're medical students, when we're running around every waking moment trying to build up our practice. Those are the wives that are sort of stuck with us through the years, and I can thankfully say that I'm coming up on my 20th wedding anniversary this December.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. What I see is that there are a lot of second wives in the older plastic surgeons, and I'm not sure why that's the case, but a lot of these second wives are either nurses or secretaries. And they are, I won't say the poster child, but they are walking advertisements for plastic surgeons. You think you've seen it in the younger people, and I tend to think I see it in the 50 and 60-year-old or even 70-year-old plastic surgeons. I think that some of the younger plastic surgeons, again, are still on their first wives, and their wives have known them for years, and I think their perspective is they're happy to have a companion, somebody who understands them, and they enjoy their company and has put in the time with them. And it's not necessarily that much about, what they look like.
Well, do you think, and I know you probably can't speak for the wives, but I often wonder if the wives really feel that they have to maintain a certain look to be married to a surgeon.
Different situation. My wife is a working attorney in New York. My wife, from a business standpoint, has never taken my last name. And with a last name like Fallick, as we joked, probably not a bad thing. But my wife has her own successful career. She doesn't necessarily think of herself as the wife of a plastic surgeon, but I absolutely agree with you. There are women out there who get upset, who are married to surgeons, who become plastic surgeons, who think, I need to keep up this expectation. I'm a walking billboard. If I don't look good, then my husband doesn't look good, and I need to be looking spectacular at all times. If I look frumpy, if I look out of place, then it's a poor reflection of my husband. I don't think that that's necessarily important to me. Not that my wife isn't beautiful, but again, she has her own career. And
there's a difference, though, between looking attractive and looking frumpy. I mean, you can look attractive and natural. And not necessarily frumpy.
I would agree with you. My wife goes out of her way to get her hair done and put her makeup on and look attractive and put together at all times. And again, probably half of the time for me and half of the time for her own job. I think what's interesting is when you get to these wives that are essentially over the top, that have had the facelift, that have, you know, the breast augmentation that's out of proportion to them, that, I don't think necessarily agree with what I would consider, attractive and a beautiful perspective.
So that goes back to the question of what is beautiful from your perspective. I see here in San Francisco that a lot of the established surgeons that have wives, maybe their first wives, are very natural looking. They don't look overdone. They don't look like a walking billboard. And so maybe they are the first wives. I'm not sure about. And then I've noticed that the wives and the girlfriends of younger surgeons are the ones that are really overdone, over the top, large breasts, sculpted bodies, beautiful faces. That's what I see here in San Francisco area. And I also kind of noticed that a little bit when I went to the medical meeting here, because I was observing the wives of some of the surgeons. And again, I don't know if those are first wives. So if what you're saying is the first wife looks the natural and it's the second wife that comes along that's the billboard, so to speak.
I think we also have a different perspective that we're in two highly educated cities where it's not necessarily acceptable to be, I won't say extreme, but over the top with anything. I mean, in New York, our breast augmentation patients, we're not putting in very large implants. Patients never come to me and they say, hey, I want to look good in a bikini, okay? They say, I want to look good in a cocktail dress. That's what I want to look nice as. I don't want to be overdone. I want to settle. And I think that's a New York perspective where we're not looking for anything that says va-va-voom or I want to be noticed. My patient population is patients in their 30s and 40s, and they want to look better. They want to look a couple of years younger. They notice things on their faces that they're unhappy with. Things are drooping. Their makeup is running across their face maybe a bit more. So they just want to look better. They're not looking to make a splash. As opposed to, say, warm weather climates, whether it's L.A. or Florida, where, I want to look good in a bikini. That's just a different perspective here in New York. We're covered up, 8 months of the year or something like that.
Well, that's true. I do agree. I think the warmer climates, they're a little bit more tuned into wanting to look good in a bikini compared to New York, where, yeah, you can't wear a bikini all year long, and you can't wear a bikini all year long here in San Francisco. You really can't wear a bikini at all in San Francisco. But yet, we don't have to wear heavy coats all the time, except sometimes in August in San Francisco, you have to wear a heavy coat and a scarf and gloves because it's so cold. But, yeah, I think different areas of the country have different perspectives on how they want to look. But I think that also there's a kind of morphing of what is considered to be pretty and beautiful, going back to looking at the magazines, and it'll be interesting to see how that's going to change over the years. You know, as you say, things are constantly evolving, and with newer treatments you know, there's always a new filler coming out and a new non-invasive procedure, and I mean, all these. We have such an array, a menu of options today to stay looking younger than our parents did, even though we did 10 years ago.
Right, absolutely. There are a host of tools and techniques. At the end of the day, though, most of them do the same thing. I mean, if you want your skin to look younger, whether it's, you know, a chemical peel or a laser or a different type of laser, it all works in the same way. It's all essentially burning off that outer layer of skin and letting new skin form underneath. There are new types of implants that are out, but at the end of the day, for the most part, they all pretty much look the same. There are facelift techniques that change, but for the most part, what are they doing? They're lifting up the skin, elevating the cheekbones, hiding the scars maybe a bit more. I think that those techniques, even though they're changing, probably have less to do with, as you said, you know, what society thinks is beauty. And we've alluded to it throughout the conversation that changes. And it may change depending on an actress who shows up. It may change depending on, you know, where you live. It may change on immigration patterns in this country. There are a host of things that change what, you know, society thinks is beautiful. I mean, it used to be you wanted to look like the California girl with a deep, dark tan. Clearly, we've moved away from that.
I don't know, like Julia Roberts and Angelina Jolie. I think we've moved away from a little bit of that as well.
I certainly hope so, because I see less and less of those patients that come in that, you know, look like they've got the duck lips as or the Joker lips. I mean, in my office, basically, I tell patients, I will undercorrect. I'll put less in. You want to come back? No problem. No charge. I'm happy to take care of you. But the last thing I want is you coming out of my office where you look overdone. And I travel in a bunch of social circles, and it gets back to me that if somebody, you know, somebody looks overdone. I mean, I've had patients come in and say, God, I hope you didn't take care of so-and-so. You know, her eyebrows look like they're in her forehead. So every patient out there is a walking billboard for you. And, you know, you need to be careful.
So on a non-business perspective, and again, going back to your own views, do you think women can be naturally beauty? Can be naturally beautiful without Botox, without fillers, without breast augmentations, just natural.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, my wife has had nothing done, even though she keeps begging me for Botox, but she's never around for that. you know, women age, you know, gracefully and beautifully. When a patient comes to my office, we need to be on the same page where we need to both say, hey, yeah, I see what you're talking about. I understand your concerns. Yes, I can address that. But if your breasts are sagging a little and I don't think I can necessarily make them better with an implant or lift, I'm going to say, you're looking good. Not much I can do for you. I'll see you in a couple of years. You're part of the mainstream or you look good and let's move on. And I think patients appreciate that because not everybody who has a problem needs a solution. And sometimes the solutions are the problem. I've seen patients that have had breast augmentation who just basically needed a lift or didn't need anything. And they were sold by another plastic surgeon or by even a non-plastic surgeon the wrong procedure. Would have been better just to leave them alone. And patients appreciate that.
Yeah, I think that because today there is the world of cosmetic surgery, plastic surgery is becoming like a Wild West frontier.
It's been like that forever.
Well, but it's getting worse, and you know I've mentioned this on a couple episodes of my show before, and I think that you know consumers they're taken in by a lot of what they read and a lot of what they see, and they don't do the right research, and they go and they have procedures done that they don't really need, that's not done right, and then there's a lot more problems involved in trying to fix it, and so. I think that's a problem that's probably going to get worse over time. And that, as you said, leaving well enough alone, I think it's very respectful for a surgeon to say to their patient, you know, you look great. You don't really need this done now. I mean, I really respect that versus the, okay, well, this is what we can do for you, even though they don't really need it because it's become more of a business.
I've fought for years, and I really have a hard time with celebrity doctors, people who basically will do whatever it takes to get their name, their face on a magazine or TV because, you know, they wanted to inject, you know, insert celebrity name here, okay? Because most of these people, they refuse to say no. They think, I can now tell all of my friends that I took care of so-and-so and so-and-so. And they do a horrible job. I mean, I get sent requests all the time from magazines. What do you think's going on here? What about this? Because they trust my judgment. And they know that I am sort of conservative by nature, that I'll do the right thing. And if you ever read any of my sort of Twitter feeds or what I do, I'm a huge fan of safety. I'm a huge fan of education. I'm a huge fan of doing the right thing. And I think that's where we sort of need to be in plastic surgery. We need to be ethical. We need to be upstanding. And we can't inject or do surgery just for surgery's sake. I always joke that I answer to, you know, my patients, my family, and Uncle Sam, and every day I sort of have to look at them and make sure that I'm doing the right thing. And if your ideals of beauty are different than what the patient wants, and you need to do the right thing. So, I mean, I have a patient who came to my office and wants huge implants. I mean, off the charts implants. And I said, you know, you're crazy. You know, and I essentially good-naturedly kicked her out of the office, and I have to stand by my principles because what she wants is, you know, way outside of what I consider outside of my beauty standards. Now, that being said, my beauty standards also changed. When we started doing fat transfers to the buttock, the Brazilian butt augmentation, my staff jokingly said to me, stop thinking like a white guy.
Did they really?
Absolutely.
That's great. Stop thinking like a white guy.
I mean, that's my perspective on what I thought, and my staff said that's not what they want. Here's what you need to think like. And
that's
so I've changed. You know, I've changed my attitude. Again, that's from a surgical perspective.
Right.
It doesn't change what I think is, you know, beautiful outside of my office. But
I have to change with the times.
Have you watched Botched?
I haven't watched Botched. I've seen you're about the fifth person, or the 50th, I should say, who's told me I need to watch it. I've seen a couple of the sort of snippets of it, and it looked like, at least from a body standpoint, they were doing some nice work. I don't really know the plastic surgeons, but I saw a patient who had Semastia, it appeared, where the breasts were basically together. It looked like some nice work there. So
the uniboob.
I mean, that's not particularly the most fun surgery that we can do. And unfortunately, I see a fair amount of that. I mean, it's always harder to fix somebody else's mistakes. Clearly, you want, you know, native tissue that hasn't been disrupted before, where you believe that you can give the best, you know, the best results. But again, it sounds like the people on the show were pretty happy with things.
So do you think, I know you haven't watched it, but do you think it's a good educational tool for consumers to actually see a show like that and see what can really happen if you haven't done your research and how difficult it is to fix? And sometimes these patients get turned away that the doctors will not touch them and not do what they want to do because it's just over the top. It's just too much surgery already.
I think that any time you promote safety, education, and going to a plastic surgeon, I'm 100% behind that. And again, you know, if you read my Twitter feeds or anything that I talk about, it's all about safety. It's about doing your homework. We have a huge influx. I should say influx. We have an outflux. We have a huge amount of patients that are going down to the Dominican Republic or going to either Latin or South America and having, you know, plastic surgery done by people who are clearly not Ivan Pitanguet, as you hopefully know who he is. But, you know, bad plastic surgery and with inferior implants, inferior sutures, and having problems. And they show up in my office and others' offices asking for help. And unfortunately, they can't get a hold of those doctors. And here we are trying to do our best, trying to make the patient happy, but it's a difficult situation.
Now, I just had a conversation like this on a previous episode about medical tourism, and my understanding is sometimes when you do go out of the country and things happen, that a lot of surgeons will turn you away. They don't want the liability. They don't want to get involved. How do you feel about that?
It depends. It depends. If I think that I can help the patient, then I'm happy to be involved because it is a potential way to bring a new clientele. But if there's a problem where I can't help it, then, you know, I'll do what I can. I just had a patient who I saw yesterday who had a tummy tuck down in the Dominican Republic, was unhappy with what was done to her, didn't like her scar, potentially had a hernia, and other medical complications, has no insurance, and shows up in my, you know, door asking for my help. And, you know, with still a discussion about, you know, what we're going to be able to do for this patient. But she was, you know, she was very appreciative. And even though I didn't operate on her, I spent, you know, a good 45 minutes with her explaining what I thought was going on and you know, what we might be able to do. And at least I took a patient who had extreme anxiety about everything that was going on and calmed her down. And I think that, yes, there are certain patients which it's very hard for us. But, you know, there's a case like that where if I can do this woman some good and cheer up her day, then that's what I'm going to do.
Well, that's wonderful that you're able to do that. And, of course, calming the patient down is huge and making them feel better. And yeah, I don't envy those situations. Must be just really, really difficult, both extremely difficult, of course, for the patient, and then the surgeon has to make a decision as well. We're almost out of time, and this has been great. We've had a wonderful discussion. How can listeners get in touch with you? What's your Twitter feed?
My Twitter feed is at CosmeticSurgeMD, or that's no periods. They can go to my website, which is phallicplasticsurgery.com. They can call my office. The phone number is 212-535-9080. I've just started another blog called Two Types of Stitches, which actually is half about plastic surgery and half about men's fashion. And my perspective on that, too, which is pretty much against what the fashion magazines are putting out there. And I consider myself one of the better dressed people on the Upper East Side, and what, you know, your average man should be dressing like.
And what's the URL for this?
It's on my Twitter feed also, if you just look me up. I don't know. I actually don't know the URL for it right now.
Okay.
But I send out pretty much daily tweets on either fashion or safety in plastic surgery. And things like, don't go, you know, if you're going to go buy sunglasses, buy a simple pair that make you look cool and mysterious. It's not just about the frame. And if all you see is a frame, then those are the wrong sunglasses. Buy a pair of Ray-Bans, and you'll stay out of trouble. Things like that.
Okay. So you're promoting Ray-Bans versus Gucci and Prada and Tom Ford and
you know, I bought a
all
pair
the
of
other
Prada.
Manufacturers.
I bought a pair of Prada sunglasses once, and I wore them twice. Okay. I've got a pair of Moscat, you know, tortoise shell frames that I've had for, you know, 10 years now. And it's really about, you know, don't get caught up in the fad. And I mentioned
designers.
Right.
What's look good, you know, what do you look good in? That should be the key, but a lot of us don't. You know, a lot of us like to get caught up in fads.
I mean, this year they kept pushing these flowers on men's clothes. I live in a very fashionable area. I run with a fashionable crowd. I've still yet to see anybody wearing a flowered shirt. So save your money there. go to J. Crew and buy a gingham blue shirt with a tie, and you'll have it for a couple of years, and it'll make you happy. Okay? But I have a flowered shirt. I've worn it once. Bad idea. So again, it's that whole safety, how to dress like a regular man. And I've read the men's magazines for 30 years, and you don't have to. I'll just give you advice on that.
Oh, good. I'm going to send my husband to your blog. He could use your help. He's not listening, so I can say that.
I appreciate that. I'm always looking for new subscribers.
Oh, good, good. Well, thank you again, Dr. Fallick. And listeners can reach me at niptuckcoach.com. And my Twitter handle is Safety First, Safe Cosmetic Surgery. And you can download a copy of my ebook for free on my website again, which is www.niptuckcoach.com. And have a beautiful weekend. And thank you for listening. And thank you again, Dr. Fallick.
My pleasure.
Bye now.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Nip Tuck Coach Radio. Join us next week for another exciting program about the world of cosmetic surgery and beauty. To learn more about Michelle Garber, go to www.niptuckcoach.com. To consult with Michelle directly, call 415-494-7211.